Good morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices. I'm your host, Linda Field, and this is the program about writers, writing, the craft of writing, and we have a great show lined up for you today. I have three guests with me in the studio. I have Kathy Boyd-Fallure, who has been on the program before, and she has some great news about her writing team and writing friends, and there's a lot of publishing going on, so we're going to be talking about that. Another former guest is back with us today, John Cluett.
Hi there.
And he's going to be sharing some of his publishing experiences. And also we have a new guest, Sarah Armstrong Gardner. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now all three of us recently went to the Gold Rush Writers Conference. We're going to tell you a little bit about that in just a minute. But first, why don't we start off by, I'm going to ask each one of you, starting with Sarah, how did you get started in writing? When did you first know that you wanted to write?
Well, I would have to say probably back in high school. I mean, even before then, I would write with my mom, and she would have the typewriter, and I would tell her what to write, and she'd write, and we were going to do these plays, and they never happened. But
you wrote scripts.
I did. I went to school for screenwriting. And then I started writing my book, and then I joined Kathy's wonderful group, and I was going to study my screen or get my screenwriters or my screenplays critiqued, and so instead I started working on the book again, and then that just kind of took off. So
it's funny how you think you're going to do one thing and everything goes off in a different direction.
It really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's part of being in a group too, because Kathy's group is very dynamic and has had such success that people have had to split off and form their own groups, right? And so it's really moving. And John Cluett recently joined Kathy's group.
That's right, yes.
And we've talked before about mm-hmm. how you got started and what and all your time spent in Europe and everything,
yes.
And your short stories. You read some short stories last time you were here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask you, what's new in your life for writing?
What's new is that I'm... well, there are two sides. One is the writing side, and the other one is the administrative side. And the writing side is I'm going back to my first novel and rewriting that. I discovered that there was a what I would call a structural flaw. So I'm doing that.
How did you discover the structural flaw?
Actually, it was my wife. Who kept hammering on the same thing, and it took me a while to really understand that it was a structural flaw.
Oh.
And when I finally understood it, I could go back and say, okay, that's what I have to do. And
can you
so
just
I began
tell us
that.
Briefly what the structural flaw was and how you go about fixing that without, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but.
Well, no, it's not a problem at all. I started the book with, it's a mystery thriller with some espionage, as usual, that's what I do. And I started the book with the death of two people by two different antagonists, and this wasn't clear in the very beginning. And also, the number of antagonists were... it was just too large, too much to think about. And so I just went back and did sort of like a textbook.
You trimmed it.
I trimmed it,
maybe
yeah.
You had two books going at once. I found that that's what happened with me. And mine had to be trimmed too. So.
Yeah, could be. I haven't thought of it that way. What I discovered was that it was too complex. The plot in itself... I thought it was all necessary, but in reality it wasn't. I could just chop it down to make just a few bad guys instead of having a whole character gallery.
A whole army. Well, maybe you do have two books in one. Kathy, what's your new news that you'd like to talk about today with?
I'm actually working on book two in my Lake Tahoe trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The second title, working title, is Lake Cottage Book Haven.
Okay, the first one was Language
the Language
of the Lake.
The Language of the Lake, which is in New York. And I have a new literary agent who is handling the novel, not the children's books, the novels.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also just met with my illustrator going over our fifth children's book, which has been requested by Parks and Rec up in Air Tahoe.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, now, we all attended Gold Rush Writers over the past weekend. And we're before we started recording here, we were just brimming with comments and experiences that we had. It's a whole weekend. It was a series of 16 workshops to choose from. Over, so you could choose four out of the 16 available. Sarah, what did you choose? And what was your, what experience do you want to talk about from that?
Well, I chose a couple different classes, but the one I wanted to talk about was Gillian's How to Read Your Writing.
Oh, Gillian Bagwell.
Yeah,
yes.
Gillian, yes. And it was a very, very unique experience and fantastic. And she was a former actress, and then she wrote her first, she has two books out, I believe. But I was the first person to get up and read. I was super nervous. And
yeah, you were. But you were the first one to get up, and I thought you were so brave, and
oh,
you did so well.
I figured if I didn't do it first, I wasn't going to do it at all. So I had to make the leap. But every time she stopped, she had these wonderful techniques to help me read my work, and I ended up reading during the open mic during that night, and I used a lot of her techniques, and it helped immensely. So. I mean, I was very, very happy with the workshops, and
oh, good.
It was great.
Yeah, I was in that workshop, too, and Sarah did a wonderful job. Gillian stopped each one of us as we were reading in front of the group, and she always did it so well. She'd say, well, you're doing just great. Think about this, and then she'd tell us one thing to focus on. And you listened to everything that she said, and you modified your delivery by listening to what she did, told you every single time. You didn't just blow it off, and it really went well.
Yeah, no, it did. I just need something to help me stop shaking while I'm reading.
Kathy, what was your experience at Gold Rush?
It was my fourth year there, and it was a great experience. Again, my first few years there was instrumental in being indie published and having the four children's books out with Tom Johnson and then Luke Gonzalez. So this year I kind of went in a different direction and took the keynote speaker. I loved the keynote speaker, Carla Block.
Oh, she was
just
wonderful.
Fascinating, fascinating woman.
Mystery writer.
Mm-hmm. I bought one of her books. I've started and I'm having a hard time putting it down to write. I took the afternoon brunch speaker, Michael David Lucas, and also a wonderful, wonderful class on The Place of Place by John Engle, the English chair at San Jose State University.
Mm.
That was fascinating. He has such an amazing vocabulary. He communicates very clearly. And the big discussion in class was on setting in place. And I found interesting his choice of the title of his class, The Place of Place. He really got into the nuts and bolts of it, and even for those of us that have been writing a long time, I don't think there was a single person in that class that didn't come away with something very useful for whatever they were writing.
Hmm. Wonderful.
Antoinette did an amazing job today picking her faculty. Every year she kind of outdoes the year before.
Yes, every year it gets better. Yeah, I've been going for 5 years, and every year I think, oh, they can't top this, and then they do. It's incredible. How about you, John? What did you take
well,
away from that?
This was my first year, and I was only there just one afternoon. Previously, I've been at the San Francisco Writers Conferences two times now. And so my expectations were much lower than what I got to experience, I have to tell you. And so next year I'm not going to San Francisco.
You're not going to San Francisco
no.
Writers Conference. You're
no.
going to go to Gold Rush, right?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yes. And there's just several reasons for that. But I really thought that what I could see of the venue and also the classes that were involved, they really had to do with the craft of writing. And I think that is very important that we concentrate on that. And at San Francisco this year, unfortunately, they were not doing so much of that.
Well, they're not doing so. See, oh. I was going to go to the San Francisco Writers Conference this year when you went, and then I had a schedule change and I wasn't able to do it.
Mm.
So I can't compare, but I do know that I love Gold Rush. The workshop, one of the workshops that I took was Antoinette May's workshop on the joy of writing sex. I've done quite a bit of writing over the past few years, and I've always avoided writing about sex because it's kind of scary. It makes you very vulnerable. But I decided when I signed up for the class, I thought, okay, Linda, you've got to write something that has a sex scene in it. And so I did, and it has turned out people have liked it, what I wrote. They've liked what they heard, and it's going to be the opening scene in my book, at least for now. But I don't think I can top it. And you're supposed to grab your audience right away, so hey, why not?
You read that one for the reading. It was gripping. It was very, very well written.
Oh,
yeah,
it was
thank lovely.
You. I hope it's not just beginner's luck. our news today, before we leave this subject, I do want to make sure that everybody out there knows how much we love Gold Rush Writers.
Yeah.
And it comes around every year, and we'll be talking about it again next year, advertising it. There's a website for it, goldrushwriters.com, and you should just go check it out. And if you want to get inspired or learn more about your craft, sign up for it. It's really very reasonably priced for what you get. Wonderful. Now, Kathy, we are going to have to stop in just about a minute or so for a break, but the three of you are here today because of what has been happening in your group.
Mm-hmm.
And so why don't you tell us a little bit about how you brought these two people here and what how they have traveled on their writing road with you to get to their publishing stage.
Okay, when I founded the group with my daughter, we had a huge response and had too many people, one large group. And my goal was to break it down into smaller groups with different genre content because we had a great variety of writers. So Sarah and John and also Glenn Bodan and Bob Bissell, who's joining, are part of this new novel to screenplay group. It's not just writing novels. Some of us see our novels going to screen. I see John's, I see Sarah's and mine, and Gwen's.
Uh-huh.
We haven't read Bob's yet. So it's number four. We have a new creative nonfiction group that meets Wednesday afternoons that Donna Romero heads. We have children's on Monday and intensive novel on Tuesdays.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've broken down into, and Sarah and I are in two groups together. We're in the intensive novel in this one. And I've worked on the screenplay for this from day one with a friend, too. So it offers this new opportunity.
Wonderful. Boy, you really, they're out in Ione, which is a small town outside of Jackson. And yet you draw so many people and you have such a dynamic group. We'll be right back to talk more with our guests. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. I'm talking today with Kathy Boyd-Fallour, Sarah Armstrong-Gardner, and John Cluett, and we are discussing the fact that all three of these people are in the process of publishing their books. So, Sarah, let's start with you. You've written screenplays. You are publishing a novel now.
Yes.
Tell us what you're doing.
Well, my novel is the first of a trilogy. It's a mermaid trilogy. From the Sea is about Jocelyn, who, she washes on the shore of Ireland in the 1700s. But it's
Jocelyn?
Jocelyn, yes.
Is her name?
That's
her
name.
This is a young adult novel?
Yes, a young adult novel.
Oh, okay.
And it's an adventure story and her figuring out who she is. And it's fun. But I'm just starting the second one, which has been difficult because it takes place underwater, so I'm creating this brand new world. So it's interesting.
Okay, and your target audience, of course, is probably teenage girls.
Yes, teenage girls, and moms. I mean, it kind of goes for anyone who really wants to just get sucked into a fantasy story. So.
Uh huh.
No.
Yeah. Did you bring anything of it to read?
I did actually. It's the same thing that I read for that wonderful workshop.
Oh, yeah, let's hear that. I want to hear it again.
Alrighty. Storm clouds in the distance held watch over the choppy sea. Mist kissed Aiden's face as he followed Jocelyn along the beach. She picked up her dress, moving swiftly over the wet rocks, her cream-colored stockings drawing Aiden's gaze. Her feet danced over the rigid surface as his own slipped and scrambled for purchase. "Are you in a hurry?" he laughed, stumbling. "No." Hands on hips, she stopped atop a cluster of moss-covered earth and glanced back. Breathtaking, Aiden watched the wind blow against her. She let go of her dress, freeing it to sway with the playful current of air. "What beauty I lay my eyes upon." Strands of her hair waved to him to her. Balancing, he stood tall and tiptoed over the loose rocks, insensate of the cold waters lapping his boots. "Good God, Miss Danelle has taken her in, oh." Jocelyn picked up her dress again and bounced to the neighboring rugged rocks protruding from the water. Aiden turned to watch Edith, arm-linked in Thomas's, stroll over the safe, flat sand. "Her what?" he asked. "Anelle," Jocelyn said into the wind. "I've never heard that word before." He admired her blushing cheeks. "It means time," she whispered under her breath. "Miss Jocelyn, where are you from?" She let a long breath come and go, then looked at him. "I don't know." A wave rolled over the uneven path, washing onto his boots. "Should we go back?" Aiden asked, looking at the dark clouds drifting closer. "Rain will soon be upon us. It'll bring the tides." "No, we're almost there." Jocelyn placed her hand on the wall of the cliff and stepped down. "Not again." Aiden steered himself for the icy waters, but when he stood on the edge of the rocks, he looked down in an open cove of damp sand. Jocelyn moved down the beach. Aiden looked back at his fellow travelers. Edith would never set foot on such dangerous terrain, and he hoped Thomas would not leave the old woman. Aiden jumped to the sand, alone at last. He sprinted to Jocelyn, his boots swishing with salt water. She stood facing the giant bay. Pulling off his boots and dripping wet wool stockings, Aiden's toes pressed into the sand. He emptied his boots and wrung out his stockings before hiding them in his pocket. His fingers brushed against the coral trinket he inquired about the night before. It had cost him a week's salary, which Edith happily took. But after breakfast, he would have spent every last coin he had to win Jocelyn's favor. He began to fantasize about the moment he would bestow it upon her, but the thought was quickly erased by the very real woman before him. Luminous as she drifted over the sand, wind sweeping her hair, framing her flawless face. Aiden was amazed at the transformation in her eyes the closer she got to the ocean. They weren't dancing as they were the morning before, but there was a change. They were darker, even more alluring. Her scent whirled into his cold lungs. Then and there he knew he wanted to follow her, no matter the cost.
So Aiden has just come upon this woman on the beach, and
he's been staying with them. And
staying with who?
With Edith. Edith is the one that has discovered her and named her, because Jocelyn didn't know her own name. And he's a sea captain, and so and his employer is Thomas.
So she is staying with the sea captain.
She's staying with Edith. Sorry, there's a whole bunch of... Edith is this older lady. Thomas is her nephew, and he owns a ship, a merchant business. And Aiden is his captain.
I see.
So
I see. And so Aiden visits them and discovers her. And
yes.
It sounds like it's love at first sight.
Yeah, pretty much.
So. Now, would it be giving too much away about the plot to ask? You say that her eyes changed the closer they got to the water, to the ocean. Her eyes changed, and he noticed that they weren't dancing the way they had been before. They're dark now.
Mm-hmm.
How does she feel about being on land and
well,
being out of the water?
She's really confused. I mean, she's torn because she doesn't know where she belongs, but she's hearing the ocean actually speak to her, and she's being drawn to it. And when she's in it, she's there's this magical surge that kind of happens, and she knows she should be a part of it, but she's petrified because in the beginning of the book she's drowned before she ends up on land.
She's drowned?
She drowns before she ends up on land. That's how
you
the
mean
book
she
starts.
Dies?
No, she's... Well, we don't know. You don't know until...
Oh.
So.
This is a fantasy.
Yes.
Yes. So the book opens with her struggling for breath
mm-hmm.
and swallowing water.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she's on land where she's never been before.
Yep.
Wow.
And she has no memory of who she is whatsoever.
Oh. And so is she going to find out who she is somewhere in the book as it progresses?
Yes. No, she finds out. And it's more complicated than what she could have imagined. I mean, uh-huh. So it's a... I don't want to give too much away. I could talk about it all day, but
I know, yeah. Yeah, well, it sounds like teenage girls and their mothers would probably love it.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. It's a very intriguing plot. Now, how did you find out about Kathy Boyd Fleur and her group? And how did you get involved with them?
Well, I found her on the internet. I did a search, and I put in Jackson Writers Group, and hers, a newspaper article popped up, and so that's how I found her. I called her, and she got back to me right away, and I told her I'm a screenwriter, and she's like, oh, well, come take a look. And so I gave her my manuscript of my play, and she read it and said, okay, you can join. and then I hadn't started a new screenplay, but I had started this book, and so I took her the pages of this, thinking this will just kind of get me started in the group, and then I will give her the screenplay when I start it, because I had another idea for a screenplay. And once I started, I just kept writing on the book, and they kept giving me these wonderful feedback.
Great. Well, now, when I met you a year or more ago, you were talking about your screenplay a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What was the screenplay?
Well, my husband and I are trying to produce right now a short film. It's called Rude Awakening, and it's about a man that hears for the first time. And we're going to get it up on
YouTube?
Not on YouTube. We'll put it into film festivals once it's made.
Oh.
And
mm-hmm.
we will probably we're going to try for Toronto and things like that with some of the A list, yeah. But we will see how that goes. But
well, have you made other films?
We have. We've made Road Rage was my husband's thesis film. I had wrote that.
Rotary.
Yeah, Road Rage. And
oh,
it was
Road Rage.
It's another short film, yeah. It's a comedy about this guy gets put into an institution for his road rage. And so it's a fun little story. And then
so is your husband a filmmaker?
He is. He's a director.
He's a director
mm-hmm.
of what?
Of film. He started off, we both went to the same film school together. And then he...
What film school was that?
Brooks Institute in Ventura, California.
Okay.
And so we went there.
How long is that course of study?
It's actually a three-year. It's very quick. You get a bachelor's degree in fine arts, so, yeah.
So you probably studied screenwriting.
I did study screenwriting. And
probably a little bit of filming. And
yeah, we start. Everyone starts off with, they have to film silent films, no talking whatsoever, to learn the art of it, and that was very interesting, trying to capture mine, and it kind of makes sense because of the screenplay, the short film.
You must have enjoyed The Artist then, when it came
oh,
out
yeah.
this year.
It was, yeah, it was.
Yeah. So, So this film that you want to, the man who regains his hearing or suddenly is able to hear, how do you find an actor for that?
Well, we have one. His name is Michael Harrison, and he's actually willing to take classes because during the whole play during the whole movie he doesn't speak. He does all sign language because he doesn't know how to speak other than a voiceover.
Uh-huh.
And so he's willing to take classes on sign language because he's very... dedicated and loves the story. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're working on all fronts then.
Yeah.
But getting back to the publishing process mm-hmm. for your young adult novel, then how has being in Kathy's group helped you with getting that to publication stage?
An immense amount. It's mm-hmm. I mean, I would not be where I'm at if I did not join her group.
Wow.
I mean, it would have just been on my computer very first draft, and I might have finished it and been like, oh, I'm good to go. Why isn't anyone picking it up? But with her group, I mean, I've gone through many drafts, and I mean, John and Kathy have been amazing, amazing critiquers. And I mean, even getting into the marketing world, and I mean, not marketing, but the publishing world, I mean, it's all about who you know, and Kathy is a great person to know.
Kathy knows a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does. And that's because she's so prolific and she's so active and
mm-hmm.
gets out there. Very, very productive person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have to break, but we'll be right back for more from our group about publishing and everything going on in their lives right now. So please stay with us. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. And we're going to hear right now from John Kluwet, who was saying some interesting things during the break about his experience in Kathy's group and other writing groups recently. He has discovered the importance of reading your work before an audience.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, okay. Tell us about that, John.
Well, I never would have done it before. For some reason or another, I managed to take the leap. I think it's like a leap of faith, more or less, for a writer. Writing is very, very lonely work. You sit all by yourself somewhere deciding whether or not a word should be put in or not. And this goes on for hours and hours and weeks sometimes over a single sentence. And you do this all by yourself, debating with yourself, and really have no opportunity to get any real feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered when I started reading my little short stories in front of audiences was that I got immediate response. I could tell immediately whether or not the word was right, the timing was right. I knew if the joke worked or not.
Yeah.
And so it's been extremely valuable for me, in the same way that critique groups has been valuable for me as well. I think I mentioned to you the first time we spoke that I've been writing for a long time, but all by myself over in Sweden, and really had no feedback from anyone at all.
Hmm. Not even your wife? You said that she
yes, well, right, yeah. But what I mean is other writers.
Other people.
Other people write. Yeah, of course, yeah. She was hammering on it all the time. But to get other writers' opinions about what I was writing
mm-hmm.
Has been really, really valuable.
It really does help because you can get off track a little bit sometimes and, wow, boy, they put you right back on track.
Mm-hmm.
They say, this doesn't work. This is nothing. Character wouldn't do that.
Exactly.
But then also, it's your story, and so if you disagree with their responses, you can still keep going with the way. What
oh yeah, saying. Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are times when I just smile and say thank you for your input.
That's right. Thank you very much. I'll take it under consideration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your book that your novel that is going to be coming out. In ebook form pretty soon. You want to tell us about that?
Oh, well, that's the ebook is actually a collection of short stories.
Okay.
And these short stories were written for commuters, and I think I'm going to call it Between Stops or something like that, because it's actually a collection of short stories which don't take very long to read, about 6 to 10 minutes. But they still have a beginning and a middle and an end, and usually some sort of a little twist at the end.
Is Patty's Hammer in there?
Yes.
Yeah,
Patty
yeah.
Egan's Hammer is there, yes.
Patty Egan's Hammer.
In both forms. Both forms. There's a short version of it that's only 700 or 750 words, a flash fiction version. Then there's the real version of it, which is like the unexpurgated adult version of it, which is a little over 2,000 words.
So were you on when you were on the program before, you must have read the shorter version.
That's the short version,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we can look for that to be available on Amazon and other places when?
Yes, in June. It's coming out in June. There'll be more details on my webpage, which is jkluwet.com.
Okay, and that's C-L-E-W-E-T-T.
Mm-hmm.
jkluwet.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you send me the information when it comes out, I will also put it on Datebook on my website.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
Manzamedia.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's coming out in June, and that will include a number of stories that you've never heard about or, you know, that I've never read, although there are some that I have read. For example, the one about the Book of Kells and so on, and that has been read. Patty Egan's Hammer has been read. And this Death on Wagstaff Road, I'll be reading all of that this evening at the Barnes & Noble in Sacramento on Birdcage Plaza.
Okay, Birdcage Plaza. This evening, you mean today as we're recording, or Sunday as we're broadcasting?
The recording date, yes.
Recording date. Okay, well, too late, folks, but I bet it was good. I bet it was a good reading. You know, I want to remind the listeners that this is not a live show. It is always recorded ahead of time. So, and a lot
sorry
of
about
what
that.
We say on the show is time sensitive. So, take that all with a grain of salt. Well, would you read then this story from the book?
Yes, I will. Let me tell you a little bit about the story in the beginning. The name of the story is Death on Wagstaff Road, a place in Northern California. I usually write about places where I have lived or worked and so on. And this is a little town called Paradise. I won't get into the background of the story, but it's about a boy and his father and an experience that he has, which involves the death of a woman.
Okay.
Alan could barely get the back door open. He took another look over his shoulder, then used both hands to grasp and twist the slippery knob as hard as his 10-year-old hands could manage. He was still panting as he hung his jacket in the laundry room and checked the backyard again. No one was coming, at least not that way. "Where have you been?" his father asked, barely looking up from the Saturday afternoon football game on the television. "Just out in the woods." Alan tried to calm his breathing as he started a quick detour to his room behind his father's easy chair. "You smell like wet pine needles," said his father. "What were you doing?" "Nothing, just lying down in the needles." "Sometimes I wonder if you're crazy. Did you notice it's raining out there?" "Yeah," Alan said. "That's why I was lying in the needles, keeping dry, just like we heard in school the Maidu used to do." "Now I know you're crazy." His father concentrated on the TV again. "Whoa, another touchdown." "Great." Alan used the distraction to continue down the hall to change his soaked clothes. His room was filled with the family's leftover furniture from two generations, the squeaky black iron frame bed which had belonged to his father when he'd been young. The bed stood next to a dark oak bookcase used to house law books when it had stood in his paternal grandfather's office. A well-worn rug which had previously covered the floor of his family's front room warmed his feet when he got up in the morning. Most of his clothes came from other family members, and his mother had worked hard to resize them to make them fit as well as she could. He untied the black sneakers, which were almost his own. His father had purchased them for himself from a mail-order company, but when they proved to be too small, Alan had received them as a birthday present. With wads of newspaper in the tips, the chafing at his heels was subdued, and he could run very quickly. It was what had just saved his life. The smell of chili beans began to drift from the kitchen and filled his bedroom. It would soon be time for dinner. Alan's face was still wet with rain and sweat from his desperate run up the hill, and he dried it on his shirt sleeve. He peeked out his bedroom window again to reassure himself. Still no one coming. He was safe, at least for now. The rain continued the rest of the afternoon, filling gutter spouts with the music of falling water. By the time the football game ended, snow had begun to fall and the world outside became ominously silent. The 49ers won, and his father had just returned from a quick trip to the grocery store to buy his celebration six-pack. Seating himself at the head of the kitchen table, his father popped open a can and the family waited for his mother to bring the bowls of hot chili beans to the table. Alan tried to dispel the thoughts of the neighbor, the smoldering fire, and gunshots. His father interrupted, "Son, looks like you lost one of your worst customers today. I saw the sheriff's car at the Johnson House on Wagstaff Road on the way home. I stopped to ask what was happening, and he said the wife killed herself." The Johnsons were Alan's most dreaded customers on his paper route. They always let their dog out when he was cycling up the steep hill on Wagstaff Road. They would laugh as their little terrier ran out of their house, barking and nipping at Alan's feet as he tried to pedal up the steep hill. Sometimes Alan managed to hit the dog with a rolled-up paper in his hand just before he threw it into their yard. "Killed herself?" Alan swallowed hard, nearly choking on the spicy beans. He grabbed the glass of water in front of him, and as he gulped, a dilemma of conscience tore into his mind. He wondered how much he should tell his father. He asked his mother for another filling. Alan stared into his own bowl, raising only his eyes to watch his mother take his father's bowl to the stove. How did she do it? She ladled up another portion of beans. Shot herself in the head. The silence filling the kitchen seemed to last forever. Alan looked out the window to see snowflakes as large as mittens float down to cover the driveway. Still no one coming. He was still safe. And I'll just leave it there for a moment.
Okay. Very good. Very gripping. Suspenseful. And that will be available in June on Amazon, and your title is possibly Between Stops.
Between Stops, yes.
Yeah. You're pretty sure about that?
Yes. Okay. I will use that, yeah.
That is a good title. Good for commuters.
I was going to call it 6-Minute Stories, but I think Between Stops is more descriptive of what it actually is about.
So, how has Kathy's group helped you, John?
Immensely. Yes, I'm in two groups, and it's hard to say which one is more important, because they're both really important. Kathy's is important because she was really the first one where I got the direct help that I needed. Sometimes when you're in a critique group, you get kind of, it takes a while to understand each other. With Kathy's group, it worked immediately.
Wow.
And
good
so
chemistry, huh?
Yeah, excellent chemistry. So that's been very, very helpful for me.
Well, we'll be back in just a few minutes with more from our three guests. Stay tuned. We're back with Manzanita Voices, and my guests today are Kathy Boyd Fallure, Sarah Armstrong Gardner, and John Kluwit, and they're all talking about their publishing process with all the writing and production that they've been doing. Kathy,
yes.
Now it's your turn. How did you? You have a nephew who is in the publishing business, right?
Yes, I do. Since 2009, my nephew Martin Biro, he's a Kensington editor in New York City,
uh-huh.
And he is my sister Maureen, who is also an author, children's author, and she's working on memoir. It's her son.
Great. And so tell us more about what's been going on.
Well, I was very impressed with both Sarah and John's books. Sarah's is a 55,000-word YA novella, and John's is a very nice, beautifully long novel. And Martin just recently was promoted from his original genres that he was able to accept, which included theirs.
Uh-huh.
So I recommended both of their books, which he can still decline, but he accepted them. So they are currently sitting with him in New York City.
Okay. Now, I'm still so untutored in this because I'm not nearly that far along with mine. So
completed.
Have you bypassed the agent stage or?
No, they didn't, because they had a personal recommendation to get in there. They still will need to get agents, but it's getting a foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
In our business, it all comes down to networking and who you know. You know that.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
And he could have still refused if he didn't feel they were interesting. I sent in synopsis ahead of what they sent in.
Uh-huh.
And they sent in completed books.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So what's going on with your own writing?
I just got my first literary agent. And that's all I'll say about that. I'm thrilled.
How did you get your agent?
I researched and kind of picked her out and asked her a year ago if she'd consider representing me. It was the biggest leap of faith in my life. And she wanted me to add 35,000 words to my novel.
But
she
add.
Yes, I thought I already had enough. And so my novel's now just under 85,000. And I took out probably 20,000 words because you edit it when you do that.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm thrilled that this year I went to Mount Hermon in Santa Cruz, and this year she said, yes, Kathy, you can be my client.
That Mount Hermon conference, boy, that's another really good one.
Yeah.
I know three people who have found agents there.
Mm-hmm.
You were one of them.
I'm one of them, yeah.
And
it's an excellent conference.
Yeah. How exciting.
So she represents my novel.
Mm-hmm.
The novels. She does not represent the children, which are indie, right?
Okay. And she negotiates for you.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. I am so happy about that.
I bet you're learning a lot in the process.
I am. I'm learning a lot, and it's very enjoyable. So
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Your learning can be painful, too, so I'm glad.
No pain yet.
No
pain in that area yet. She's a wonderful person and a highly respected, and she has clients that are on the New York bestseller list. So.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. No, we won't talk about that. Okay. So tell us more about this second novel in your, it's going to be a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
First was Language of the Lake. Now this one is called?
Lake Cottage Bookhaven. It takes place mostly in a bookstore.
Lake Cottage Bookhaven.
And they all three of the stories take place at Lake Tahoe. On the California side, sometimes in the Nevada side.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, and you spent a lot of time up there. Of course, you grew up going there.
I grew up
all
summers there. We were summer locals. My grandparents built there. I know. I had no idea how privileged I was as a youngster at all.
Yeah.
So I get to do all my research there, too.
Gee whiz. So, oh, gosh, I have to go to Lake Tahoe to do some more research.
Oh, darn.
Darn, yeah. Okay, so tell us more about this book then.
Okay, this book where the lake, I made the lake a character in the first story. It's a character-driven novel about a woman facing the truth about her life, a rediscovery and of self, and also dealing with secrets.
That was where her husband had just died when the book opens, and she finds out that he was unfaithful.
She finds out he was unfaithful. And
how is the lake a character? I don't quite understand that.
The lake is a symbol of redemption.
Ah.
My book offers hope. It's dealing with loss and death. There's a lot of death. And the lake is the character and symbolic of redemption. And it speaks to the inner person. So... not so much in the second story, Bookhaven, but in the third story, which is called Azure Shore Soliloquy, the lake is very much more prominent again. And the first story took place in 1995. This story takes place in 2005. And this third story takes place in 2014.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, can we hear a little bit?
Sure. I brought just a tiny bit at the beginning. This is the prologue for book two. Snow flurries fluttered outside like ballerinas pirouetting across a stage. I began taking inventory and boxing up books in my idyllic cottage bookstore on the lake. For the past decade, my chance at a second lifetime, I have lived and worked my dream job in Tahoe City. Next week, I may lose everything. Turning the pages of a book is like opening the door to a new world. I wanted to step into a story and make it all my own. Write words in pencil on paper first and transcribe it onto computer before permanent ink leaves indelible marks that will mar the virgin white sheets. This was not the end I had envisioned penning for Book Haven. I sat buried in the midst of stacks piled high with crisp, new, and musty used books. The sweet aroma of orange spice tea steeping in a pot wafted my way from the kitchen. That was enough incentive to dig my way out and take a break. Deftly, I edged through the narrow path I'd left between the rows of classics and historical fiction. I poured a steaming cup of tea and stared at the bookshelves, neatly organized, alphabetized by the author's last name, and categorized by genre. Surrounded in a prodigious world of knowledge, endless words of wisdom, and literary creativity, I remained bereft of the needful resources and requirements necessary to preserve this cherished jewel for posterity. A disquieting wind rattled the windows and buffeted the framework of the cottage, shaking the attic rafters in the very core of my soul. These days, I hover somewhere between calm resignation and desperate denial. The bell jangled on the door. "Mom, my daughter Sarah tumbled in, her arms full with two blonde-haired little boys wiggling on her hips, squirming for freedom. Didn't you hear me calling for help with these guys?" She lowered her energetic offspring to the ground level, takeoff zone. "Sorry, honey, I was lost in thought." I set my cup down. "Connor and Zeke could come. Give Nana a kiss." I opened my arms in anticipation. They ran over, bulging in knitted layers of sweaters, scarves, hats, and gloved palms, kissed me and ran straight to the kiddie table. Once seated on the little red chairs, the boys began peeling off their winter coverings, piece by piece. Zeke patted the spot next to him and motioned for me. "Nana, read story time." Zeke grabbed his favorite book, Five Little Monkeys, and waved it like a flag in the air, announcing the arrival of the magical story hour. "It isn't Monday," Connor told him, flipping through one of the classics he'd grabbed off the stack of books as he passed by. It was a priceless vintage version of Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. I offered him a substitute, brimming full with color illustrations, open to the two-page center spread. He readily exchanged books. "No, boys, no, leave on your coat," Sarah rushed over, but it was too late. Hand-crocheted, multi-hued yarn was strewn across the reading carpet in the children's corner of the store. "I'm sorry, Mom. I just wanted to make sure. Stop and check you are doing okay with..." "You can go ahead and say it." My words fluctuated with losing the store.
Oh, losing the store. What a heartbreak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How, I may have missed it in the beginning. Has she had this store for a long, long time? It sounds like it.
She buys it at... Well, it happens in book one. I don't want to give away too much.
Okay.
I almost did, right there, just like
right
that.
Right there. Okay, we won't... You have to read the books, folks.
Please do buy our books.
That's right. And, Kathy, how do people... now, you've written... four children's books already, had them published over the years, and you're working on number five.
I'm working on number five. I did the first four. The first one I'd written years ago. The other three I wrote in 18 months, and this one isn't finished. It's half written, and I took it and met with my illustrator. And so I have to come up with an ending for that one.
So what website do people go to see your children's books and learn about Language of the Lake and everything else that you're doing?
You can go, the children's books, the publisher is Lulu Press Incorporated, www.lulu.com.
L-U-L-U.
L-U-L-U. They're also at Barnes & Noble and the iStore and on Amazon.
The iStore. Mm-hmm. iStore?
iPhone Store.
Yeah. The letter I.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't have an iPhone, so I'm really behind the times.
Yeah, the e-books are, they're also in e-book form. They're softcover, hardcover, hardcover strictly through the publisher, and then e-books.
Okay.
And you can also go to my website. I just got PayPal.
Good.
It's my name, KathyBoydFuller.com. And then we have an Amateur Fiction Writers, amateurfictionwriters.com, and you can purchase books. All our books are listed on our group website also.
I bet it's a pretty.
And we're all on Facebook. Well, John?
Not yet.
No. He will join us soon.
Join them on Facebook. Okay, Sarah, again, give your contact information so people know how to find out more about you and your books.
Okay. You can find me on twylaarmstrong.com, T-W-Y-L-A, armstrong.com. I'm also on Facebook, so you can find me there. And then our film will hopefully be on Indiegogo.com. So.
Okay, wonderful. And John?
Yes, I have a website, jcluitt.com, and then also I have a blog called Unchain My Words, and so it's on Blogspot, but if you just Google Unchain My Words, you'll find how to get onto it.
Unchain My Words. I was there a while ago. I've got to go again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a website, of course, for the program, Manzanita Voices, where I have a blog and also some works in progress. Every once in a while I'll put a little bit more of my, usually it's a little bit of my book up there. I'm working on a Civil War novel. And date book is on there too. And also some archive programs. You can find all that at manzamedia.com, manzamedia.com. I sure would love to have you go there. I'm afraid old Kathy has one more thing.
Yeah, we have, Sarah and I have blogs too. Mine's WordPress. Isn't yours WordPress too?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and I just added my WordPress blog to my Facebook site, if you go on my page. And we also have author pages on Facebook. Kathy Boyd Fuller, author, novelist, photographer. And Sarah, what's yours?
Sarah Armstrong Garner, novelist and photographer, screenwriter.
Okay, and all of those things. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, everyone. It was a pleasure having you let us come into your living rooms today. We hope to be with you again next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great week.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.